Bondi Tunes International. Around the world and down your street.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting on FM into Australia and New Zealand and around the globe. I'm Henry in Sydney. We have, we think, all our North America correspondents on our panel show today, going from north to south, Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg in Canada, Dawn Dross, we hope, in Orlando, Florida, and Thomas Booker in San Antonio in Texas. Welcome to the show, guys.
Glad to be here.
Good evening, Henry.
And look, Dawn may drop in, we hope. She's having internet connectivity problems. We've got a lot to talk about today on this show. But firstly, I just want to get an update on what's going on with Canada and the what they are calling the trucker protests, which I do believe, Ronan, have all but ended.
They have ended. I mean, as you will know, Justin Trudeau, for the first time, evoked the Emergency Powers Act, which essentially gave the police and the authorities very extensive powers, both to remove the protesters and to seize assets and including money that was raised. And a development today is around one of the organisers of this, as I say, so-called Freedom Convoy, a lady called Tamara Leach. And she was the lady that was behind the infamous GoFundMe campaign that raised more than $10 million that was eventually stopped. And the reason for that was concerns that actually this money was not going to go to truckers or other families, but may have been going for sort of political purposes, with Tamara Leach being associated with sort of fringe hard right parties. Mm-hmm. And also concerns that some of her motivations, including and as well as a few of the other organisers, were actually about the overthrow of the federal government, and which is really why Trudeau acted. Now, Leach was actually arrested on February 22nd as the operation was going on with the Ottawa police to remove the protesters, and she was denied bail. And she appealed, and then the appeal hearing was today. Well, she had a first hearing on March 2nd when that judge said that she's not convinced that Leach would go home and desist with this behaviour. That was then appealed to the Superior Court today. And the judge says that Leach should be released, but she does require some supervision. So there was various sort of conditions put in place around cash bonds, very strict conditions about including her leaving Ontario within 24 hours to return to Alberta. She's not allowed to use any social media and not allowed to have contact with other individuals who were involved in the protests. You know, her defense said that, you know, she had no previous convictions. She had a job. And that risks here were fairly minimal. Now, this is, of course, some people posting on social media that she's been treated in a way that other Canadians would not have been around protests. But I think some of the differences here as to why she was originally denied bail was around that it wasn't really a protest, it was an occupation. These people were refusing to leave downtown Ottawa and were causing enormous disruption both to business and to people living in that area. And also these concerns about the money and about the political motivations.
How are the people of Canada? Is there a sense of relief that this...
Because
how long has it been going on? Like months?
It went on for weeks on end, almost a month. And I think that there's really sort of two points of view here. There are some people who think that Trudeau didn't need to invoke the Emergency Powers Act. This was kind of an overreach and an overreaction, but at the time when it was invoked, there was a lot of frustration around how this was being handled by the police. We had the police chief of Ottawa having to resign, and people just really dissatisfied that the police were not dealing with the situation as they should have in terms of removing the protesters. Mm. So some people think, well, that went too far. There's other people who think that Leach is being sort of treated in a disproportionate way. I mean, the judge did say that her trial, you know, won't be held for several months, but it's highly unlikely that she would face a lengthy imprisonment if she faces any at all.
Yeah.
But I think Trudeau's poll ratings have dropped on this, but I think the vast majority, and that's really to do with the fact that he may have overplayed his hand, but I think the vast majority of Canadians, Henry, are relieved. I mean, we're in a position now where the vast majority of COVID-19 restrictions are being removed, which makes a lot of this somewhat pointless. Things have settled back to a more calmer normality. The only protests we're having now are around Ukraine.
Right, quickly, Ronan, have they determined what percentage of that trucker protest were people from the USA?
No, I mean, they think there was some, but bearing in mind, Henry or Thomas, anyone actually traveling from the US to have taken part in the protest would themselves have to be double vaccinated. So it probably wasn't, you know what I mean? They couldn't have crossed the border without it. So I think it was unlikely that there were terribly many. I think, you know, it's clear to Canadians that the organizers of this protest, quite frankly, hijacked, you know, some truckers who are a minority, a small minority of truckers, and used it for their own political ends. And their political ends were a far-right agenda, the removal of the Trudeau government, and in fact came out with a manifesto stating that, you know, the federal government should be suspended and you know, the Senate should take over and things like that, which are, of course, highly unconstitutional and frankly illegal. We're getting into sedition at that point. And no Canadian wants to, how much they dislike Justin Trudeau, most Canadians believe that if he's going to be removed, he's just going to be removed in the next election. So I think there's a sense of relief. There's a sense that whatever reasons were behind these protests, they don't really exist to a large degree. Any issues around sort of vaccine mandates at the border, Canada has to move in lockstep with the US around that anyway. And as I say, in certainly Manitoba on the 15th of March, all COVID-19 restrictions are being removed, including requirements to self-isolate, mask wearing and everything else.
Okay, now, as a perfect segue, Justin Trudeau keeps good company and has just met the Queen.
Indeed, he's well, Canada has been, in fairness, I think, to sort of the forefront around this. I mean, we've sent we sent some non-lethal supplies to Ukraine. Now we're sending sort of lethal weaponry, and by that I mean guns and heavy munitions. Trudeau has been in lockstep with NATO, with the Western allies around sanctions. We're sanctioning oligarchs here as well. We have very draconian sanctions. You cannot buy any Russian alcohol products here now.
They've taken the vodka off the shelves.
I think what's really interesting about where I live is Manitoba has very, very strong ties to Ukraine. There was a very significant immigration from Ukraine into Canada. At least, you know, a fifth of the population here, over 200,000 people, would claim some form of Ukrainian ancestry. And you do see Ukrainian influences in Winnipeg in terms of churches, in terms of sort of Ukrainian food products that are quite popular and freely available. And there have been fairly significant large protests about the Russian invasion happening in Winnipeg. So it's quite a large, vibrant community here. That so clearly in Manitoba, sanctions against Russia are supported. What Trudeau is also being saying, is careful to say as well, is that Canadians should not get into, you know, taking their anger out on ordinary Russians, who of which again have a significant population. This has nothing to do with them.
It's a very, very good point, and I'll be quoting Bernie Sanders later on in this broadcast. Dawn is not with us. She's in Florida, but she's not online at the moment. Hopefully we will get her in there. I wanted just to ask her a question, which I'll ask you, Thomas, if you don't mind instead. Senator Marco Rubio, on Sunday, brushing off criticism he and another GOP lawmaker received for tweeting. Actually, you tell the story.
Well, as I saw it, it's just a complete gobsmack that they had worked their way into having a Zoom conference with Zelensky and talked to him for several minutes. And it was kind of, I'm not really too sure what was accomplished during the interview, what they were, you know, what they're asking him if he needed or anything like that. There wasn't all that much expression of great sympathy or anything. But the horror of it was at the end of it, they turned around and shared the meeting, the Zoom meeting. They recorded it and shared it on their social media. And they were asked specifically not to do that because there were potential clues as to where Zelensky was, where he was physically during the Zoom session, where his originating was, and other little clues that a clever intelligence agency could pick up on, and they would figure out how to direct hit squads. I mean, I guess his major issue right now is that Vladimir has sent squads of people into Ukraine to try to find him and take him out and take his government out. And it's known, American intelligence has advised
them. You have to ask the question. It's kind of funny, Vladimir sounds so much like Vladimir. Anyway.
I'm not going to retreat him with any reverence. I'm sorry.
Yes, okay. But it has to be said that it was a silly move, wasn't it?
The press conference, the Zoom conference?
Yeah, doing the pictures and all that sort of stuff. I mean,
yes, it was.
It was silly. I mean, the whole world is watching him. You know what I mean?
Yes. And, I wouldn't think, I mean, it was just basically a room where he was sitting in a chair. As far as I know, I need to delve a little more deeply into this. But it was the big shock was that they shared.
I've seen it on CNN. They actually have video of him and the pictures on his screen. Mm-hmm. Yes. So anyway, look, that's happened. Now, we can't keep up with this war. There have been three unsuccessful ceasefires. The one before the last, I think, was in Mariupol, Ronan. And I'm just wondering, has there been another one since?
Yeah, they've had representatives of the Russian government and the Ukrainian government have met now three times. And the focus of these discussions have been around ceasefires to set up humanitarian corridors. The second one broke down where they thought they had something agreed, again around Mariupol and other areas, but the Russians continued shelling and artillery fire, so people would just have been slaughtered. Today the Russians countered that they were perfectly happy to agree a ceasefire, provided those seeking refugees going through those humanitarian corridors went to Russia or Belarus, which are about the last two places on earth they want to go. Mm-hmm. London to the West. So that broke down. I think the more interesting development today, and an indication of just how badly this is going for Putin, was out of nowhere, the Russians suddenly countered. And there is going to be a much more significant meeting happening on Thursday between the Russian foreign minister and the Ukrainian foreign minister. Again, that'll happen in a neutral place. And then we've got all this activity going on around the Israeli prime minister, where the Russians said that they would immediately stop what they describe as their special military operation, i.e. the invasion, if there was an immediate ceasefire. The Ukrainians agreed to stop shooting at them, that they recognize Crimea as now permanently part of Russia, and that they recognized the independent sovereignty, not that they would form part of Russia, but the independent sovereignty of areas of eastern Ukraine known as the Donbas region. Now, this is a very different message from the ones Vladimir Putin was delivering at the start of this, where he was talking about the demilitarization of Ukraine and the denazification of Ukraine and talk of installing a puppet government. And I think the reason for this is how badly this is going. And The ultimate symbol of how badly this is going is this large Russian convoy that's about sort of 60 kilometers long that's stuck about 40 miles outside of Kiev. Yeah. And that's due to, we think, a combination of just incredibly poor logistics. This is not the US Army or any.
I heard that there was fuel issues as well.
Fuel shortages, just logistical supplies. And we also think, Henry, and I think this is perhaps being validated, that we've got to be really careful. Even with stuff the Ukrainians put out, they've put out sort of interviews with sort of shell-shocked Russian conscripts saying they didn't even know they were in Ukraine and didn't know what they were doing and that they hadn't been fed and that morale was fairly poor. But it does seem, and now today another development is that Putin has now sent in his entire invasion force, which is between 150,000 and 200,000 soldiers, probably not including at least the 10,000 that have already been killed. And is now looking for foreign fighters, including Syrians.
I didn't hear that. That was interesting.
The idea that the fantasy that Vladimir Putin had, and it was a fantasy, was that the Russians would be welcomed as liberators. Mm-hmm. And he's selling this fantasy to to the Russian people that, that the country is run by basically neo-Nazis, which is completely untrue, and that they would be welcomed as liberators and that would march gloriously towards Kiev and remove Zelensky and install a puppet government. It's going to happen in a very, very bloody way.
Yeah, okay, I just want to do a station ID. This is Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting on FM in Australia and New Zealand and across the world on various media. I've got Thomas Booger in Texas and Ronan Seagrave in Canada, in Winnipeg, on the line. I just want to mention that, you know, Thomas, we remember when Putin said sanctions would be a declaration of war.
War, yes.
What are your thoughts on that, Thomas?
Well, right at the moment, what's going on now, it's for sure there are atrocities that are being perpetrated. One of the things that's happening, it's almost like a tantrum on the part of Putin, is that they're now targeting indiscriminately bombing civilian areas and just going on a sort of... They have artillery and rockets and everything on a periphery, just still on the eastern, near the eastern border. I think, I'm not sure, they're just in the outskirts of some towns, but they're carrying on a blanket bombardment where they're just hitting everything, and they're attacking, and they are attacking civilians, and they are, doing what they can to injure the populace to try to drive Ukraine into, the Ukrainian populace into a panic. I'm speculating here.
Did either of you guys see the footage of a family, I'm sorry to say this, literally being blown up in front of CNN cameras? Yes,
I didn't see that. I saw the man, a mortar shell hitting a street where a man was standing nearby. This was a very disgusting family.
Yeah.
They were killed. I mean, what the Russians are doing is precisely what they did in Grozny, precisely what they did in Georgia, and precisely what they did in Syria and Aleppo in particular. Mass bombardment, both aerial and artillery, to drive the population into submission, create such terror attacks that their will to fight is drained. But again, the miscalculation that Putin has made, is the Ukrainians' will to fight.
But he's the sort of man who will not stop, because he wants to save face. He doesn't want to lose face, put it that way.
But I think that's what led to this sort of statement today, because what are his options? The alternative to not seeking some form of agreement again around, Donbass and Crimea and sort of Ukraine being permanently neutral or some sort of treaty being put in place, his alternatives now is a long, bloody conflict where the Ukrainians will continue to fight to the last man. He underestimated, as perhaps we all did,
Zelensky. He sure did.
A highly capable wartime leader in terms of raising the morale and summoning the will of his people to fight. I saw the video today of this sort of granny. I don't know what part of Ukraine she's from, but she was preparing Molotov cocktails.
Yes.
And she, in direct language, she said, "I'm prepared to throw these at these Russian shits."
Yes.
The other miscalculation that he made, and I think is the most serious one for him in terms of his own survival here, is that he did not foresee both the speed, the extent, and the scope of sanctions. This has happened as an unprecedented scale. Admittedly, Zelensky's played done a tremendous job in encouraging this.
Yes.
But the severity of these sanctions is enormous, and they're going to get more severe if we get into now Russian energy supplies being turned off. We could have, a combination of both extremely angry and now much poorer Russian oligarchs and
Russian generals. Well, they're not going to be that poor.
You know what I mean? they have been bankrolling Putin and supporting Putin and keeping him in power, as have the generals and his security service, FSB. There was a report at the weekend. We don't know whether it's true or not. It could be fake. That certain sections of the FSB are unhappy at how this is going, that they had warned Putin that things would not turn out as he thought and this could be a disaster on all fronts for Russia.
But
it's not inconceivable that something could happen here.
Okay.
This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
Thomas, I'm interested in how the media is followed by the Russians, because I can't imagine that the Russians have too much media in there. I'm not sure how they would do it, but I'm just wondering if Putin is probably watching BBC World News or CNN to get coverage of all this.
I'm sure Putin. He's staring at himself. He's the narcissistic personality. I'm sure he would be watching how he's coming across. You know, and if they're angry at him, it's probably going to be even feed his ego more than. But I was really astonished a long time ago when the Soviet Union collapsed, and then Russia was opening up more and more, and they started talking to all the people who were under the thumb of the regime, the communist regime. And as when they were started talking to people, how they started finding out that all the propaganda and the lies and everything that were seeping into the society, they never really believed. And, there was this astonishing open-mindedness that they were very cynical and very doubtful of their own government all the way through, that the propaganda really wasn't winning any friends. And now we can see that I've seen that they're trying to cut off Western media into the Soviet Union because they're starting to have the street protests. Mm. I don't know how dangerous it is for large crowds to collect in Russia right now, but it's very dangerous. But I would think that this is because they're all standing up coming out to oppose this, and there's a significant enough portion of the population doing so. And risking what they are risking to make their displeasure known, it's just telling me that they're finding other means. They're finding ways. Number one, the phone calls and stuff directly to relatives in Ukraine and friends in Ukraine, and also having access to. They might have a leaky internet system or a leaky connectivity, and they might be able to tap into these other news outlets and finding out what's really going on. And, you know, coming up with more substantiation of the fact that Putin has no knowledge, understanding of what the hell he's doing. He's just, you know, floundering.
I want to talk about sanctions because, Putin's saying, sanctions won't hurt us. Now, let's look at this. Mm. First of all, the media, you've got the likes of, I don't know, TikTok. I don't know if that matters much.
Yeah,
TikTok has moved out. What's the other one? I don't know if Facebook's moved out. I don't think they have.
I think they shut down Facebook.
Yeah, they shut it down. Yeah.
Oh, they did. Yeah. Okay, and they don't want, of course, that works for Russia because he doesn't want information crossing. Mm-hmm. And also the big banks, you're looking at all the big banks are moving out of Russia. Mm-hmm. The question is, he's saying, sanctions don't matter. Do they matter? And if so, how much?
Well, the population's getting very infuriated mm-hmm. with it because they can't get the money out of their banks
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Their teller systems don't work.
You know, this is something, which annoys me is the fact that the Russian people, they can't go to the ATM and get any money, mm-hmm. I just want to mention U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, who went on a TV show in
was it
America.
Stephen Colbert?
It was actually Seth Meyers, I think. Maybe
Seth Meyers.
Knowing him, he was probably on both.
he was going to be on Colbert too. So.
Okay, well, maybe that's what I saw. But he said, "What about the Russian people?" You know, he said, "What struck him was, we must remember that Russian people are beautiful people, just as mm-hmm. the Ukrainians are. It's all about the nastiness of the regime in Russia, not mm-hmm. the people." And I think that's fair to say in terms of, basically Putin is damaging his own people.
Well, he's been damaging them for years, Henry.
Of course.
He's looted the country in partnership with the oligarchs, and all of that wealth has not been flowing to your average Russian, has been flowing to a very select group of Russian billionaires. I mean, just incredibly wealthy individuals who are now having their super yachts seized.
I think that's how Putin came into power initially.
It was how he came into power. Yeah, we don't even know how wealthy Putin is himself in terms of money and billions of dollars he may have received from these oligarchs. So, yeah, he's been destroying the country for years. He's now selling them this incredibly false narrative. And if you watch his hour-long address, which we think was pre-recorded, because of the same tie he was wearing sort of a few days beforehand, where he attempted to justify this to the Russians. So what the Russians are being told is Ukraine really belongs to Russia. It's not even a real country. It's always been part of Mother Russia. That's simply not true. There was a city and a culture in Ukraine long before, you know, Moscow was fields, when Kiev was a thriving city. The second thing he's telling them is that Ukraine has been hijacked by the West. So this gets us into the territory of Putin not wanting Ukraine to join NATO, which the Ukrainian government is their position.
Isn't that what it's all about, though, Ron?
This is the main one. I mean, Putin has been obsessed about Ukraine and obsessed about NATO eastward expansion and seeing that as a threat to Russia. So we've had, you know, the Baltic countries joining NATO. We've had Romania, Poland, getting ever closer to the Russian border. Ukraine joining NATO would mean a direct border with NATO and Russia. And Putin saying, well, what if nuclear weapons were stationed in Ukraine? Wouldn't that be a bit like the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, in terms of the US objective? And you know, I do think, actually, I've got to be honest here, I do think this has been mishandled by the West. I think we've allowed this to sort of carry on in terms of, rather than perhaps some cooler heads in NATO and Western leaders saying, we understand that you want to join NATO, but actually from a global security perspective, it mightn't actually be that great an idea. And it would probably be better for Ukraine to have a status like Finland, whereby you're not a member of NATO, but you're a
favored nation status.
And a favored nation status. And that may not have driven Putin to the obsession that he's had with Ukraine.
But the trigger wasn't NATO. It was Ukraine wanted to join the European Union. And
But that's not, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, nuclear weapons turning up in Ukraine. I do think it was the NATO piece, the view in his mind that Ukraine joining NATO would mean a direct border with NATO and the potential, not that I think it would have happened, of nuclear weapons being in Ukraine. Now, to be absolutely realistic about this, to join NATO takes years and years. And it's actually a very bureaucratic organization.
I bet it is, yeah.
With kind of a four-stage process. And Ukraine was barely at stage one. So this would have played on for many more years. But in Putin's mind, he wasn't prepared to wait for that. He felt also that agreements that had been made at the end of the Cold War about that there wouldn't be any, you know, eastward NATO expansion had been ignored and trashed by the West. He made a very famous speech in Munich in 2007, where Putin essentially reset Russian foreign policy as completely opposed to any further eastward expansion of NATO. So this is absolutely at the heart of it. You go no further. And he was looking for absolute assurances that Ukraine would never join NATO, that it would be perpetually neutral or even to some degree under some degree of Russian influence. He annexed Crimea to sort of make his point back in 2014. And then obviously the Donbass separatist war that's sort of been quietly going on ever since. And I'll be frank here. The West has been asleep at the wheel here. We've allowed this situation
to carry on. Did we see it coming?
We ought to have, Henry. And whatever else that can be said about Vladimir Putin, we have to take seriously what he said, what he says and he does. Because he's generally actually followed through with it.
Okay, if you've just joined us, this is Henry for Bondi Tunes International. I'm in Sydney. I'm speaking with Thomas Booker in Texas and Ronan Seagrave in Canada, in Winnipeg. A couple of things I just want to mention here now. You know, it's amazing what people are made of. People are inviting. I'm going to talk a bit about people moving out rapidly from Ukraine to Poland, a lot to Poland. People are inviting strangers into their homes, people who are refugees and have lost their houses in Ukraine. Now, here's an interesting thing that no one's mentioning on media that I thought about. There are 2 million, just under 2 million people have fled Ukraine, but there are 46 million people in that country. Thomas, what's going to happen with that?
Well, whoever stays behind, if you're not killed or blown up or haven't been able to get them out, the elderly and the children, and apparently women are staying behind because they want to fight just as much as the men, and they're standing up. But the one.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about this numbers game. Okay.
Uh-huh.
There's 46 million people in that country, and only 2 million people have left after 2 weeks of this war. I mean, how there is no room for all these people in other countries. That's my
thing. That's the problem. That's what one of the things that they've been pointing to is that there are a couple of factors here that is going to that's going to cause complications for the West. And one of them is that the Europe is all of a sudden, after it has just recently gotten over a previous refugee crisis from all the people, ironically, trying to escape from Syria and other such places that Putin was busy bombing and blowing up to help his buddy there. Now the Europeans did not feel very comfortable with that influx of refugees, and they're just now getting over it. And now there's another influx of refugees coming from a neighboring country. And what kind of a burden is that going to put on the societies, and what kind of unrest is that going to create? And that's, once again, this could be something else that later on could be exploited. I don't know that was one of the things that helped damage Brexit, that helped with Brexit, that helped Britain.
Interesting to note, Ronan, you know, what hurts me to watch is all this, we mentioned this earlier on, shooting at schools and hospitals, shelling civilians
apartments,
relentlessly. I'm seeing hundreds of orphans being shipped out of Ukraine. Yep. I mean, this reminds me of World War II. Do you remember all the children who were shipped off into country areas in Britain, Ronan? I know you're not old enough to remember this, but in World War II. This reminds me of World War II.
But yes, we've all seen that footage. And yes, these Russian, I'm not sure I could describe them as military tactics, but whatever. As I say, they're doing a playbook straight out of what they did in Grozny, straight out of what they did in Georgia, straight out of what they did in Aleppo.
Terror tactics. It's just terror tactics.
The one thing that is also obvious from this is that were there ever to be a conventional war between NATO and Russia, my God, NATO would annihilate them. And the reason for that is not necessarily, and what this war is showing, it's not necessarily always about numerical advantage. It's about A, how professional you are, and B, it's about your willingness to fight. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing here is, first of all, the Ukrainian army is far more professional, well-trained, and better equipped than it was in 2014. They have had sort of NATO advisors. And
others. It's worth actually letting our listeners know about the backstory to 2014.
Yeah, I mean, the backstory then was the overthrow by the Ukrainians through a sort of popular revolt of a pro president and a replacement with a more sort of nationalist Ukrainian president. Now, interesting around this, you know, Putin has kept going on about sort of neo-Nazis and the places run by neo-Nazis. That's completely untrue. It is true that there is a small faction of neo-Nazis who have formed militias and have been fighting mainly in against the Russians in eastern Ukraine. But in the last election, presidential election and parliament elections in Ukraine, they got barely 2% of the vote. And of course, President Zelensky is himself Jewish and had relatives killed in the Holocaust by the Nazis. So the idea that this is being sold to the Russians, that the place has been run by neo-Nazis, is absolutely and utterly untrue. But I think Putin knows that a conventional war between Russia and NATO, he'd get absolutely slaughtered. This is why he changed his military strategy to more incorporate nuclear weapons into his conventional military strategy. This is why he keeps going there.
Is he bluffing?
He rattled the warheads, yes.
Is he bluffing? Look, we have to assume.
Wouldn't he be shooting himself in the foot?
I mean, it's global annihilation. Now, what one couldn't rule out, though I do not believe he will go there, is the use of a battlefield nuclear weapon, a lower grade nuclear detonation to sort of, you know, annihilate Kiev or whatever, to make his point. Even though I think that is really unlikely, I think the reason why he's saber-rattling there is the Russians taking the line that any sort of direct engagement here would be considered by the Russians an act of war and the entrance of competence to this war. Now, that is why Zelensky has kept going on about a no-fly zone and asking NATO to enforce it, and why that is not going to happen, because the logic of a no-fly zone would mean engagement by NATO aircraft at Russian aircraft. It could mean that, NATO aircraft are fired on by Russian artillery.
Absolutely.
It's just not going to happen.
And you know what, Thomas, he does seem quite angry about the fact. He says, if you don't bring in your aircraft, can you give us some?
Yeah, well, they're trying to work out a deal, because the Ukrainian pilots who trained, ironically, on Russian aircraft, and Poland seems to have a supply. Yeah, and Poland has a supply of the Russian. I forget the type. It's a Su-25 or something. It looks similar to an earlier version of a United States fighter, a twin tail, twin engine, I think, and they're fast. They actually had some video of them flying in and firing rockets at apartment complexes from the air. And they've also had some video. A few of them have been shot down, too, I think by Stinger missiles, but I'm not totally certain on that. But if they can get the Ukrainians would like to, as you mentioned, that convoy that's stuck there with all kinds of equipment and
hanging up.
And the Ukrainians would very much like to have a few fighters with some rockets on them to take in and blow most of that column away if they can from the air. And but then I think, I don't know what the hang-up is. I think it's timidity on the part of Poland to relinquish that, because I think also the surrounding European countries are not interested in getting directly involved.
I agree, Thomas. I don't think Poland wants to do this at all. It the Russians have been saber-rattling about it, and I really don't think that's going to happen, actually. They just do not want to get involved to that extent. They're also grappling with the refugee situation at the moment.
Again, that's going to destabilize the rest of Europe too. But
yeah, I just think that's, again, a line too far. And I think, you know, there probably is something here that perhaps, you know, Zelensky or the Ukrainians misinterpreted, or the West sort of gave an impression that, you know, they might come to their aid more directly. That was never going to happen. And it's for the blunt, simple reason is that Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Article 5 of NATO is invoked. If one's attacked, you're all attacked, and other NATO countries come to the aid. Ukraine is not a member of NATO. And to be frank, from a US perspective, it's probably not significant enough. You know, do you know what I mean? As horrible and terrible as this war is, you'd ask yourself the question, but what would be the strategic interest of the US going in? You'd be hard-pressed to come up with an answer.
And cost a fortune.
Yeah, cost a fortune. Again, more Russians, you know, American soldiers again fighting in Ukraine. Biden doesn't want to go there. Where I think the end game for this is, I'm just going to speculate here, but I think the most likely outcome for me of this, and I do not know when and how, is some form of agreement that will secede Crimea permanently to Russia, that will allow these largely Russian enclaves of Donbass and eastern Ukraine not to secede to Russia, but to be allowed to have some form of independence or some kind of federation with Russia. Ukraine signs a treaty with Russia declaring that it is permanently neutral and will have a sort of Finland.
Is Putin going to put up with that?
Well, he said
he might have
the Russians have said this today, that they will agree to this. I think the strategy that Putin had, or the thought, the fantasy that he had, that, you know, this would all be over in a few days, and the Russians would be put in their puppet regime in Kiev, and it would all be over, it hasn't happened and isn't going to happen. So his alternative is weeks and, quite frankly, potentially months and months of bloody
death,
conflict
destruction.
In Ukraine. Yes, they could take Kiev, Henry. They could take.
You know, as we record, they're surrounding Kiev, and they want their little hands on that, don't they?
They could take it, but what's not going to happen here is the Ukrainians and Ukrainians are not going to stop fighting, and that is this most serious miscalculation. So
they got that wrong, Russia, didn't they? I mean, they really didn't think these guys. Sorry, Thomas, what were you saying?
No, the hope would be that they turn it into another Afghanistan, because that was what helped demoralize the original Soviet Union, and a defeat and a humiliation like that. Ronan and I have already discussed the Cuban Missile Crisis way back when.
62, when, the year I was born.
Yeah, Khrushchev made the decision to concede to Kennedy. You know, a certain agreement that Kennedy would remove the rockets from Turkey, and then Khrushchev would take the missiles off of Cuba. And what happened after that, 2 years later, Khrushchev was invited to retire in no uncertain terms. Yeah. So, and I'm thinking along this way, there would be a dissatisfying end to this, and it's going to be once again the Afghanistan experience for the Russians, and the kind of like a Vietnamization experience for them. The military will be totally discredited and demoralized. And Putin will probably be invited to go stay at his mansion on the Baltic Ocean and sort of disappear. And maybe later on discover that he's got polonium in his system.
That's a scenario. And I think the other thing that for me just doesn't make any sense right now is this sort of talk that Putin would go on and attack Baltic countries. After this,
you ain't seen nothing yet. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia are already armed to the teeth. They're not about
to. Really?
It's just not going to happen. And you know, if he can't actually even hold Ukraine, the idea that the Russian army is going to be marching gloriously across Poland into the Baltics is an utter fantasy and nonsense.
And it's a fantasy. And Ronan, it's a fantasy of the past, isn't it? I mean, really.
Totally. This is like almost going back to the 1800s around warfare like this. I think the other thing that's going to tell here is the cost. So you have Putin trying to fund and keep a massive sort of occupation of Ukraine, while all the time sanctions start to bite more and more. Angry oligarchs, unhappy generals, unhappy intelligence forces. If I were Vladimir Putin, and I thank God I can't read into the inner recesses of his dark mind. I would be looking for my off-ramp. How do I get out of this? And how do I get out of it in a way that I can say, well, Ukrainians are never going to join NATO. Crimea is forever Russia. We've protected the eastern Ukraine enclaves of Donbass and those other areas that are going to be forever under Russian protection, job done. And that's his off-ramp.
But will Ukraine ever join NATO? Will that happen?
It will not happen.
Okay.
I just believe it will happen.
Ronan, you touched on the sanity of Vladimir Putin. there's a lot of protests going on around the world, obviously, and many people are comparing Putin to Hitler. Is that a fair call, or is that extreme?
Well, I
that was a pregnant silence.
Well, put it this way: let's go for the similarities, and then we'll go for things that are dissimilar. I think the similarities are certainly an ability to wage brutal warfare and indiscriminate killing of civilians, and not playing by rules of warfare and the Geneva Convention, those things are true. There is a comparison there. And do I think that Vladimir Putin wants to engage in some kind of holocaust of Ukrainian people? I don't think so to that extent. And I think he's much more sort of politically calculating than that. Having said that, what he has done in Ukraine, whatever about the politics and his playing of this by Ukraine, by the West and everything else, what he's done is an act of evil. And we've got to be really clear about this. Invading another country that was not, this point in time, threatening you in any way, militarily or any other way, is an evil act and has to be utterly and totally condemned as doing so.
And it's also illegal.
Completely illegal. I mean, I think quite rightly, not that I think Vladimir will ever end up on trial, but you know they are committing war crimes on a daily basis. The indiscriminate shelling and bombardment of civilians are war crimes. So he doesn't play by the rules that, for example, NATO would and Western countries would. And I'm not defending U.S. actions in Iraq or anywhere else, but it is of a different order, and they do respect. Generally, the Geneva Convention and rules of conventional warfare. That is not the case with Vladimir Putin.
Go on.
No, what I was saying is what I think though has been demonstrated for years, Henry, we've been told about the build-up of the Russian forces, and they were spending all this money in relation to building up their conventional as well as their nuclear forces. But the bottom line is, you can have all the equipment and weaponry that you want. If you do not have professionally trained soldiers or infantry, air force and naval forces with a willingness to fight, it doesn't really matter what you have.
But Ronan, the reason that they are not professional in their jobs is because they haven't had to do their jobs, a job like this, for a long time, I'm guessing.
I think it's more to do with that. At least 40-50% of the Russian army is conscripts. That is absolutely, obviously, not the case in the US army, when none of them are conscripts.
No, I see.
The training that they receive is far less and far less extensive than you would receive in the US army, or indeed any professional NATO armed force. And we're hearing that they didn't even know they were in Ukraine. We're hearing that they are not being supplied with fuel, they are not being supplied with food. That saps the morale out of your army. It would not happen with the US Army. Those things just would not happen. They're unthinkable, or indeed any other major Western army. So I think for me, whatever myth has been developed about the Russian army and the Russian forces and they're this and they're that, it's been absolutely smashed to smithereens here. They couldn't even organize a convoy to enter Ukraine without a lot of it being blown up. They've suffered significant losses in relation to their assets and in relation to their air force.
I got to tell you, it would make a very dark comedy someday. We got to go soon. Thomas, I just want to get, you're a kind of a science-y kind of guy. Elon Musk has offered his help.
No, actually, in this particular case, he wasn't blowing it out of his touche. No. He has the Starlink satellite system that's been put up.
Yes.
And he actually was able to make the Starlink, he was actually able to hook it up and give everybody who needed one an account. You have a ground station and a terminal. And you can access it. Basically, you do a burst communication with each satellite as they pass over, and they packetized it and made it network compatible. So
is this active? Is this active?
It's active. Actually, yes. You could actually, Henry.
For
a couple of $100, you could have a ground station of Starlink satellite. And,
How much does it cost?
I think it's a couple of $100 and then a subscription.
So, how is he helping in Ukraine with this? Are they paying for this? Are they getting satellite feeds into their phones?
I think he's giving it to them as, and also it's a great advertisement for Starlink too.
Oh, it's great PR. I mean, you couldn't buy that PR.
And this is better than the kids trapped in the cave in Thailand. This is, he's actually coming to the rescue.
He's got something bigger to play with now.
Yeah.
Good for him. So. I kind of like Elon. Here in Australia, of course, you everyone knows that it's mostly a desert, and we have Telstra running the whole show, and they're criminal as far as I'm concerned. And Elon's coming in and saying to people, people who live in the middle of nowhere in this vast continent of Australia, he's saying, I'll give you a satellite feed for like $20 a month.
Yeah, and it's credible. I mean, he's ruining the skies for astronomers and everybody else because he's got the, it's like 30,000 of these satellites. They're going to be, no, really, it's going to be that much of them to give coverage.
We've gone slightly off the subject. We've got to go soon. I just want to let you both have a last word here. Thomas, what's your last word? And, in a nutshell, what do you think's going to happen in the state of Ukraine?
Well, I think we were talking about the professionalism of the military. The military in Russia isn't really what it is the chief of staff in the United States or whatever the militaries are in the European countries. But the military in Russia is a political organization. They're just as political as anybody else. And they wield a certain amount of power, as they would, because they're supposed to be the ones relied upon to suppress any uprising in Russia, because that's their cultural neurosis. So I'm thinking Putin's not going to, this is going to go on, there's going to be a stagnation in Ukraine, and Putin's going to be ousted one way or the other. But I don't think Putin is ever going to admit, he doesn't have it in his personality to accept the fact that he made a screw up. He's got to be perfect. He's got to be all powerful.
Of course, it's
he's got to. Yeah. he's got a personality disorder about him that dictates that to himself. And of course, he's Russian, so it would be a dark, dank, convoluted thought process in his.
Okay.
But I just think he's gonna doom himself eventually. But I don't know how much horror and terror and murder and mayhem he's going to continue to subject Ukraine to before this is over.
Okay, Ronan Seagrave in Canada, final word?
No, I do think there are major risks to Putin in terms of his survival. I think that's self-evident. I think what the coming days and weeks may show is whether this off-ramp's going to work or not, whether we various countries, maybe Israel, France, others that are involved here, are going to broker some kind of deal here that it stops the war, that is a settlement, as I say, around Crimea, Donbass, eastern Ukraine, and around Ukraine being permanently neutral. I mean, I have to say, I just can't see any other off-ramp out of this that doesn't revolve around those things. Mm-hmm. The alternative is, months and this dragging on for months and months, which is entirely possible. An alternate strategy, as Thomas has outlined, being played out here with the West out of hopes that with the stranglehold of sanctions and the cost of the war, that Putin is eventually toppled. So either one of those two scenarios could play out. But I do see increasing and more intensive efforts over the coming days and weeks involving, the Israeli prime minister wasn't turning up in Moscow for nothing. Intensive efforts by these countries to try and broker a deal here and to stop the war. The Russians would withdraw. There's the settlement. There's going to be no more talk of Ukraine joining NATO. However, even if that happens, we're still in a very different world. And as long as Vladimir Putin in that scenario remains in power, relations between the West and Russia are going to remain extremely fraught. Mm-hmm. The risk of something going wrong and a miscalculation, those risks have been very, very significantly heightened. And we're just going to be in a different and, frankly, more dangerous world for quite a long period of time.
Okay. Ronan Seagrave in Canada, Thomas Booker in the US. Mm-hmm. Thank you both for joining me.
Oh, here, yeah. Henry, here you go.
Oh, beer.
That's a wrap. It's
approaching 4 p.m. in Sydney. I think I'll get away with that.
Go for it, big guy.
Thank you so much. You guys, thanks. And we'll keep up to date on this. And hopefully Dawn will join us next week. Thanks, guys.
Pleasure as always. Take care. Thank you, Thomas.
Take care, y'all. Peace to the world.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
A few questions that I need to know. How you could ever hurt me so. I need to know what I've done wrong and how long it's been going on. Was it that I never paid enough attention, or did I not give enough affection? Not only will your answers keep me sane, but I'll know never to make the same mistake again. You can tell me to my face, or even on the phone. Write it in a letter. Either way, I have to know. Did I never treat you right? Did I always start the fight? Either way, I'm going out of my mind. All the answers to my questions I have to find.
My head's spinning. Boy, I'm in a daze. I feel isolated. Wanna communicate? I'll take a shower. I will scour. I will roam. Find peace of mind, the happy mind I once owned. Yeah.
Flexing vocabulary runs right through me. The alphabet runs right from A to Z. Conversations, hesitations in my mind. You got my conscience asking. That I can't find. I'm not crazy. I'm sure I ain't done nothing wrong. No, I'm just waiting. 'Cause I heard that this feeling won't last.
I had to find
gotta feel at ease, need to be free from pain, go insane. Alphabet runs right from A to Z. Conversations, hesitations in my mind. You got my conscience asking questions that I can't find. I'm not crazy. I'm sure I ain't done nothing wrong. And now I'm just waiting. Cause I heard that this feeling won't last that long. Never, ever, have I ever felt so low.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.